Matt Fry on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, time to take the temperature of Trump's America. Let's speak to Simon Marks in Washington, LBC US correspondent. Good morning, Simon.
Morning, Matt. As you know, febrile, I think.
I think febrile, exactly. Was it febrile? I never know. But anyway, there's a lot going on. Where do we start? So let's actually, I'll tell you what, let's start with the presidential decree order scrapping federal funding for NPR and PBS. Now, this is not, these two sets of acronyms don't mean much for British listeners, but they are essentially, you know, the American version of the BBC and public service radio, which is funded not entirely by federal money. It's also funded by private contributions. They have these sort of regular fundraising drives, which are incredibly tedious, but they work quite well. And Trump wants to scrap all that. And of course, the liberal media is up in arms about it. Trump supporters say, finally, tell us what's going on.
Yes, well, they are the closest thing that America gets to the BBC. But unlike the BBC, as you know, there is no license fee here. So they are supported by three sources of funding. A substantial source of funding is direct cash from the federal government. Then they are able to secure what is known as underwriting by companies, which is not quite the same as advertising, although to all intents and purposes, it looks like advertising. Yeah. And the third source of funding, which is very important to them and one that they will, I think, now be trying to access on an emergency basis, is what they refer to as donations from viewers like you.
Yeah.
Direct donations from members of the public to their own local NPR and PBS affiliated radio and television stations. It has long been an ambition of the conservative right in the United States. I mean, literally for as long as I can remember, going all the way back to Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
To defund NPR and PBS because the conservative right ideologically argues government should not be supporting public broadcasting. Public broadcasting should stand or fall on its commercial success like any other broadcaster. And of course, there has in more recent years been deep political hostility to the kind of coverage that both NPR and PBS provide in the realm of news. Now, Donald Trump is zeroing them out of the federal budget, or at least proposing to, which is the most dramatic threat to these institutions since their creation. We've never seen a proposal like this go to Capitol Hill. They have friends on Capitol Hill, who not just Democrats, lots of Republicans, who quite like their own local public broadcasting stations because it's a way for them to connect with their constituents. So let's see what happens to all of this. But it is another example of a major cultural institution in this country being threatened with, not shutdown in this case, but substantial dislocation. I mean, for that money to go would cause a huge change in what those two separate broadcasting behemoths would be able to carry on producing and offering to the public.
Indeed. And I have to just say, having spent a week in Washington, when, of course, I saw you, Simon, listening to cable television, where you either have the, you know, the anti-Trump world of MSNBC and to some extent CNN and the very pro-Trump cult of Fox News and others, NPR and PBS, although a little bit dry and sometimes a touch boring, at least try to steer a middle course more than anyone else. Not that anyone's listening necessarily. And that, of course, would be lost if they were to disappear completely, I think.
Yes, I think it's also just worth making the point, Matt, that there's another area of broadcasting where the rubber is about to hit the road. The Washington Post is reporting this morning that VOA, the Voice of America, which, as you know, was shut down by the Trump administration just a matter of weeks ago, is apparently now clear by the Department of Justice to come back on air in some fashion next week.
Ah.
So, you know, this is part of a bigger series of questions.
Yeah.
They take these actions. They shred organizations like Voice of America. They think they've shut it down. They've taken it off air. If you go to voanews.com, it's like seeing the news in aspic. I mean, the lead news story on voanews.com was written on, I think, the 15th of April and refers to Keir Starmer saying sooner or later Russia must yield to peace. I mean, not much has changed in that regard.
Yeah.
March the 15th, not April the 15th. Well, now they're set to come back on air in some fashion. Well, what does that that look like after Donald Trump accused them of being radical communists who were engaged in criminal acts of fraud, waste and abuse? And who's going to run them, and who's going to control their editorial output? So, you know, this whole governing thing is much more complicated than many of them understand.
I mean, the bigger picture, I guess, which you're referring to as well, and which is certainly something that, you know, I had tried to get my head around last week, is to what extent are we witnessing a slide into authoritarianism, as many, you know, quite sensible people have been suggesting is happening in the US, or are we actually seeing what Bill Clinton once said, which is everything that's wrong with America can be fixed by everything that's right with America? And what's right with America is that the courts are still working, the press is still free, you still can still demonstrate on the streets, and you know, the universities are fighting back, and there is civic organization against what Trump is trying to do going on right now. Where do you stand on this big question then of authoritarian slide?
Well, there's no bigger question. The answer to it is going to determine whether this remains a democracy or not. Yeah. Are they going to adhere to court orders? We have a judge now saying that they are not again allowed to use the 1798 Alien Enemies Act as a legal justification for deporting people, sticking them on planes without any kind of due legal process and sending them to El Salvador. They can't do that anymore, says a judge. The Supreme Court says by 9-0, unanimous, they've got to bring 29-year-old Kilmer Abrego Garcia, deported to El Salvador. They concede by mistake. They've got to bring him back to the United States. He's still in El Salvador. They insist they're not going to do it. One interviewer this week pointed at the phone on Donald Trump's desk in the Oval Office and said, you could pick that phone up right now and order his return to the United States. And Trump said basically, yes, but I'm not going to do it. Are the courts going to have the final word in adjudicating the excesses of this administration, or is Donald Trump going to work his way through the Supreme Court, lose there, potentially, on a variety of these issues, and then go extrajudicial and basically suspend the Constitution and say, I can't get done what you sent me here to get done. You gave me a thumping mandate, as he always rather falsely claims. Now I need to be allowed to get on with doing the things that I'm doing, and the courts are getting in the way. These pesky judges are trying to stop me from doing what I promised you I was going to do. The outcome, of, I mean, I don't know which way that's going to go.
But that's the crucial question, isn't it?
Predict. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if he suspends the Constitution on that, if he invokes the Emergency Powers Act, which I think, amongst other things, allows him to use the military against demonstrators on the streets of Washington and other cities, that is a massive deal, isn't it? Then we're talking Chile 1973.
Totally, especially in an environment in which he's got a Defense Secretary, Pete Hegseth, and other senior lieutenants, all of them sitting around that cabinet table over the last week, North Korean style, heaping praise upon him. None of them, I think with the possible exception of Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, willing to stand up to him. Mike Waltz removed as National Security Advisor because he's deemed insufficiently pure ideologically. I mean, that's what has done him in, I think, almost more than the signal gate group messaging chat flap. There are no restraining influences there that are going to say, no, Mr. President, actually, we're not going to use troops in those ways. Now, look, we're obviously racing ahead of where things are after just 100 days. But this issue of whether he adheres to court rulings and obeys the independence of the courts and goes along with final decisions that are promulgated by the nine justices of the U.S. Supreme Court. Remember, six of them, Republican appointees, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to give him what he wants. That is going to be the story of literally the future of this country and its democracy.
Let's talk about the impact of Trump abroad. And it's just interesting breaking news, actually. The ABC of Australia reporting that Labour has won the Australian federal election. The Anthony Albanese, who's the Australian Prime Minister, is re-elected. And of course, there were doubts about his re-election. But, you know, Trump has helped him, arguably. And of course, Trump helped to get Mark Carney get elected in Canada when the Liberals there looked like a complete No Hope Party just a few months ago. So let's talk about Mark Carney. He's coming to Washington on Tuesday. That should be quite an interesting encounter, shouldn't it?
He is indeed. I mean, I think it's going to be fascinating because as we've all seen and we've all known for many years because of his time as Governor of the Bank of England, he's a very sober character and he is someone obviously deeply steeped in an understanding of international business, trade, tariffs, finance and fiscal policy. And, you know, he's not coming here for any kind of sort of showman purposes. He's coming here for a serious-minded discussion with a president who, let's be honest, is not personally particularly involved in the detail of many of the policies that are being implemented as a result of his decisions and in his name. And so Mark Carney wants to resolve the tariff issue that is bedeviling business between Canada and the United States, putting American jobs at risk, as he has pointed out, leading to rising prices in the United States, as he has pointed out. And, you know, it was interesting. He was asked yesterday if he was worried about the possibility that Trump would launch a kind of Zelensky-style drubbing of him publicly. And he very quietly sat there and said that he really wasn't worried about that. He was coming here for a serious, substantive conversation. Mm. The question is, and again, it's a bit like, you know, this decision about Voice of America. Trump now is going to be held to account for some of the things that he has done. And he's going to be held to account partly in front of the cameras, but mostly behind the scenes by a Canadian prime minister who essentially is coming here and saying, OK, stop the nonsense. Mm. Let's put all of this behind us and find a new way of propelling the relationship onto a positive track, even though, of course, Mark Carney has said that the traditional nature of the relationship between Canada and the United States is now shredded, that there's no going back to the traditional amity and comity that has existed, gone much further than any European leader in that regard. And he comes here having won an election that Trump clearly won for him in
Well, this is it, isn't it? Because you remember that the Oval Office Zelensky meltdown, Zelensky was berated by J.D. Vance and others for not saying thank you enough. I mean, Mark Carney has every reason to come in with a massive thank you, Donald Trump banner. Because without Donald Trump, there is no way that he would be Prime Minister of Canada today.
Absolutely. And of course, when he did it to Zelensky, having complained that Zelensky's approval ratings were low, which in fact was false. I think at the time, Zelensky's approval rating was about 56%. Within days, Zelensky's approval rating back at home had soared to 75, 80% because of the Trump drubbing. So this Trump effect on... I mean, he could have ended up, Donald Trump, with... Pierre Poilievre, the Conservative Party leader in Canada, you know, not going to take Canada into America as its 51st state, but clearly much more philosophically aligned with Donald Trump than Mark Carney. Trump could have ended up with Poilievre in power. He was 25 points ahead of the Liberals and Mark Carney at the start of the campaign when Justin Trudeau resigned.
Yeah. And then Poilievre lost his own seat, let alone his party.
Lost his own seat because of Trump.
Yeah. Got to leave it there. Simon Marks in Washington, thank you very much as ever for coming on.